Okay, so what I was going to say is oftentimes, you know, whenever Bob's not up here doing what he loves to do and preaching to us, you know, he gets to do one of the things I think would be the biggest blessings for any pastor or any spiritual father is for him to be able to display the young men that he's had an impact on in their lives. You know, I'm one of them that he's had a huge impact on. He changed my life. You know, there's so many of you guys that have done that. And I'm very excited today because he oftentimes will talk about, like, he'll have, you know, John or me or Danny get up and preach. But then, like, he'll be like, but trust me, there's like 30 or 40 or 50 other guys that could have done the same thing. And I'm like, yeah, there really is that. You should get them up there because these guys are awesome. And that's one of the blessings, man. Today, you're about to hear one. And this guy's a long time coming. You know, not only because of, you know, his knowledge of the Bible, but how long he stuck with his ministry and with his church through the thick and thin. And, you know, when I first met AJ, you know, I was changing his diapers, you know, basically. So, no, not at all. Actually, if you guys know AJ, this is a man here. He never wore diapers. He came out with boxers and a pistol holster. So, you know, no, man, this kid's been a blessing. You know, and back when I started being the youth group pastor, you know, one of the tough things about that, and some of you guys know that story. I didn't even want to do that. I came here to learn the Bible, get closer with God. But, you know, Bob told me this is an opportunity in the ministry. Hey, what do you think about it? And I wanted to be obedient, so I did it. And part of the reason why is because back when I was in high school, I never really got along that great with, like, just the group of kids. I always thought, man, they're just so superficial and fake, and I'm just not about this. And then I get out of that, I graduate, and the first thing he does is send me back to that same group. You got to be kidding me, you know? And, you know, so you placate people, you meet them where they're at and deal with that. But the cool thing about AJ, while being a young youth pastor, he was one of those kids that I could talk to like an adult about spiritual things in the Bible. And it's not because, you know, he was faking it or just doing it because his, you know, parents told him, hey, make sure you talk to the youth pastor about spiritual things so he thinks you're spiritual. It's because this guy actually cared about it. You know, you could see it. This is what he lived. This is what has always been in his heart and soul. And it proved itself because of the tough times that he went through in life, not having his family around him, watching them be here and then not be here, the different struggles that he had to deal with being a young man without great, you know, parental influences in his life, and still sticking to that book and watching that book develop him, bring him through, give him a beautiful wife, keep him in the ministry, establish him, and now you're about to hear what God's been doing. So for me, I mean, this is exactly what the church is about. This is Old Path's greatest heritage right here. Not only being able to preach the Bible, you get a lot of great preachers that are sensational, that can put the word out, but to do what Bob has done, to be able to take himself, put himself in young men, and then reproduce himself in them, and what you're going to hear in AJ is what it's all about, guys. That's a heritage not many churches have. And literally, there are like 50 of them, you know, that can come up here and do that. And so that's just a testament to our pastor and the awesome things that God's been doing through him. But now you're about to get to hear something from his fruit here. And so, AJ, I love you, man. Thank you for all you've done and meant to me. You come up here and give us what the Lord's put on your heart, bro.
Is that on? That's on? Okay, cool. All right, well, my name's Ralph. AJ's left the building, so I'll be here to fill in for him. If you got a Bible, go ahead and come over here to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, and I'll be there, and I'll be in maybe a few other spots today, but that's going to be my main spot. But like Zach already said, my name's AJ Patrick, for those of you who don't know me. I've been around here for quite a while. A lot of you guys probably do know me pretty well. And, you know, all of us here are pretty much, especially a lot of you guys to me, you guys are family and friends to me, so a lot of you guys probably know quite a bit about me and just my character and how I am and I guess how I think and everything else. But for some of you that may not know me, just a little bit of a kind of a background so that way you can understand a little bit how I think. When it comes to me, when I'm putting together a devotion or a sermon or something like that, I'm not the type of person who could sit down and just, you know, lay out something really, really complex and just expect myself to get it and expect, you know, you to get it. I'm the type of person where I'm very visual when it comes to learning. That's one of the reasons why I can't sit in front of a computer all day and do that job. I'm in an apprenticeship right now in construction, and 90% of my learning is literally hands-on. It's me going into work, and yeah, they teach us some stuff at school, but 90% of my job is getting out there and doing something and learning by actually doing it. And I've always kind of been like that. I don't know why. I just have. If you were to toss me
an algebra textbook or a textbook of any kind, it would be extremely, extremely difficult for me to put that stuff together and to understand what I'm trying to learn. And so, like I said, I'm a very, very visual learner, but there's another thing in another way that I learn really well, and that's examples. I need examples like you know, you need air to breathe. I need them to be able to understand something. And for me, luckily, that's what's made it so easy when it came to just getting in my Bible and reading it and learning it and even putting together devotions and stuff like that or sermons. Because the Bible, if you don't know, and most of you guys do know this here, the Bible is absolutely filled from cover to cover with nothing but examples of really, really complicated things that you really shouldn't be able to understand. And it takes these really complicated things and it breaks it down into something so simple one of the little kids in the Timothy group could get it. You know, a good example of that, you take something as complicated, and it is complicated, something as complicated as salvation, and it can break it down into something a kid can understand. I want anybody here who doesn't believe me on that, after we get done today, go back to one of the Timothy kids and go back and tell them that you haven't showered all week and see what they say to you. See how they laugh at you. They'll probably make fun of you and run off and tell their friends, and then, you know, seven more of them will come up to you and ask you if that's really true, if you really didn't shower. Go do that to them because they understand that you have to clean yourself. You have to be clean. And salvation is just like that. It takes something like your eternal soul. Your eternal soul, if it hasn't been, you know, clean, basically, it takes something so complicated like that, how God deals with it, what the Bible has to say about it. It takes this really big, complicated thing, and it breaks it down into something as basic as you need to be bathed. You need to clean. You need to be clean if you're going to be okay with God. That's all it does. That's what the Bible does. And it always worked out really well for me. I'm not big into cooking and stuff like that, but I know if you're a baker, you can take something like leaven and bread and you can understand salvation with something like that. If you have just a little bit in there, it ruins the entire thing. And it's the same way with you and me. If we have a little bit of sin in there, if there's something wrong with us somewhere, it ruins the whole entire thing, and you've got to get that out. And that's what the Bible does. It takes these really big, complicated things and it breaks it down into something super, super simple that even a little kid in the Timothy group could understand. And that's how I've always been. I don't really remember much of like my first devotion and stuff. I remember really four things about it. I remember Zach asked me to do it at volleyball, I think. And I don't know if it was youth group. I think he may have just pulled me and had me go do it for, you know, an adult group or something. I remember it was Zach asked me to do it. I remember being terrified. I remember being absolutely terrified to do it. I remember that I'm pretty sure it was in Psalms 165. I don't remember the verse. But it was that verse over there that says, "Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them." I'm almost positive it was that too. But I remember another thing about it, and it was one example that I used whenever I gave that little devotion. And I don't know why this got tied into it. I have no idea how it got connected. But I remember the example that I used was, I remember at the, you know, when I was living at home and stuff, we had some woods behind our house. And me and, you know, my brothers and stuff, we went back and we played back there all the time. It was fed by a storm drain, which, looking back on it, probably wasn't good to play in, even though we were doing that. But, you know, I mean, we did. We swam in it and did whatever we wanted to do. But I remember I was back there. It was around the fall time, maybe October, November, somewhere in there. And if you've never been in the woods when it's around that time of year, you know, in the springtime, especially when it's fed by a storm drain, you've got all this water that comes down through, and usually it eats out these embankments. So you've got these real steep areas, you know, where basically the water ate the creek bed out for quite a while. But in the wintertime, in the fall, you get just about maybe a 6 or 7 inch little trickle going through the bottom. And what happens when you have that is, you know, you've got storms that come through, so they'll knock branches over, and branches are kind of hanging off into the, you know, and down where the creek is at. You've got rocks that kind of surface from the bottom of the creek bed because, you know, there's not enough water running through it. And you know what my example was that I remembered, and I don't even know why I put it in there, but I can remember it to this day. My example was, I was sitting on a log, and I was just doing whatever I was doing. I don't know what I was doing at the time. But I watched just one single leaf fall, and it fluttered down, you know, and it hit the creek, just the water. And I watched it, and it kind of flowed and went around this little bend right in front of me. And there was some rocks here, and it hit the rocks, and it kind of bounced off. It got stuck for a second, but then it rolled off, and it kept going. And then it kept going down a little further, and there was a tree branch that had gotten knocked over, and it hit that tree branch. And it got hung up for a second, but then it kind of broke through, and it rolled off the outside. And I watched it do that all the way basically down, maybe to where the stairs are at. And then it turned around the corner and it went on and it did its thing. And you know what I got from that? I don't even know how old I was. What I got from that was, I was pretty young. I was probably in middle school or whatever it was at that time. But I knew later on in life, I believed what people around here had told me. I believed what Bob had said. I believed what, you know, guys who got up and preached and what Zach was saying in youth group. I believed all these things that all these people told me, that there was going to be a lot of things that I was going to come up against in life. And I had the option, I had the opportunity to choose, do I want to just go with the crowd and get stuck like all these other ones? And you know what? I can blame it on the fact that, well, there's something in my way. And look at who else, you know, look at everybody else who got stuck there, how they got in that situation. I could blame it on that and say, well, you know, I'm not the only one, so have pity on me. I'm the victim here. I got stuck. Or I could have the option, yeah, I could run into it, and I could maybe struggle with it for a second like that little leaf did. But at the end of the day, it was my job to decide, do I want to get stuck here? Do I want to just, you know, bounce right off this thing and keep going down? That's what I got as a kid. And that's what the Bible did for me. I could sit here and look at things in this book and all the examples, and that's how my brain always works. And it went from things like that when I was a little kid of, you know, playing in the woods and whatever. It went from things like that to, as I got older, it went into a weird fascination with special ops and stuff like that and studying those guys. It went from that to things with work, things I noticed there, or even just things I saw on TV or just, you know, saw anywhere else in life. And I'd sit there and I'd just write them down and whatever, because I can't not see them. And so I've always been like that. I've always been one of these people who has, you know, kind of thought about things like that. And like I said, as I got older, it kind of transitioned into things with work. And that's another really good one too, just because I'm able, when I'm there, just to see so many parallels of things that, you know, we see in the Bible today. And for the last, I haven't been on it for about like 2 months or something like that, but from January, for about 4 months on from January of this year, and even a little bit before, the place I was at work, it required a whole lot of overtime from us. We were in the position I was in. I'm in a plumbing apprenticeship in Kansas City, and the spot they had us in, it was just a fab shop. And what they did down there is, if you had something really big that would be really difficult to build out in the field, they just had us build it, and then we just ship it out to them. But the problem with that is the field is obviously the priority. You know, you need to get everything out to them. So sometimes if they had a lot of stuff that needed to get done, they would throw us on overtime. And, you know, I learned a lot of things from watching guys on overtime. I watched that overtime, for one, it can be very tiring. I would watch guys come in, especially when you've been going for 2-something months on 5 or 6 tens. I've watched some of these guys. They come in on Monday, you know, they're all chipper and, you know, they're laughing, they're joking, and they're messing around with each other. And you see those guys leave on Friday or Saturday, and they are straight up exhausted. They couldn't care about if they got something done on time. They couldn't care if, you know, whatever they got done was good quality. They don't care. They just want to get it over with, and they just want to go home to their families. So I noticed that. I noticed that over time it could get pretty tiring whenever we were doing that. And, you know, another thing it could do is, it could sometimes feel like you weren't being appreciated very much. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I wasn't being compensated enough. I live in the United States. I get paid time and a half for working an extra hour out of 8 hours. You're really blessed to live in a country that does that for you, or gives you double time if you work on a Sunday or something like that. So I'm not going to say I wasn't compensated well. I was compensated very well. But I'm not going to lie and sit here and say that I didn't necessarily all the time feel appreciated. There's nothing worse than when you've worked, you know, already 40 hours that week or 50 hours, and your boss comes up to you, you're tired, you're not at home on a Saturday or whatever, and your boss comes up to you and he's like, hey, when's this going to be done? Are you almost done with this? You know, where are you at on this? And you're just sitting here like, come on, man, I've been here all day. I've been working on this thing. You can't cut me a little bit of slack. So sometimes, you know, I wouldn't necessarily feel appreciated. And I saw a lot of guys get that attitude, and they kind of get a bad attitude when it did come to overtime. But, you know, there is one thing I saw. I saw one thing that it did for not only me as the employee, but it did for my boss. And it showed me, if I ever get in a position of leadership one day, who in the world is going to be able to show up and work and actually do their job when we need a job to get done? It showed me that. It showed me who was actually showing up to work every day and working, and they weren't just going and hiding in the bathroom or walking around or doing something. Who was actually showing up and working? And it did the same thing for my employer. He got to see everybody and who was actually on the job and who was working. And then after a period of time, whenever, you know, it came to me moving on and going out to a job site, just because they kind of do that in your apprenticeship, just so that way you get a wide variety of things that you learn. When it came to that point where I was going to move on somewhere, you know what the biggest compliment this guy had about me? It wasn't the fact that I had good quality work, which I hope I did. It wasn't the speed of what I was doing. It wasn't even my attitude. the biggest compliment this guy had about me when he was talking to my, you know, the guy I was going to go work for, is he said, yeah, he's a good hand. He'll stay busy all day long. He can stay busy all day long. And that alone was enough to make this guy I was going to go work for get ecstatic about, okay, well, I'll have a guy who can stay busy and he'll do something all day long. And so, you know, I learned a lot of really good things and got a lot of really good examples out of that overtime that I was working. And the other thing I wanted to kind of do whenever I was asked to, you know, preach this morning and whatever, I didn't want to just get up and talk about something that wasn't relevant to myself or to anybody here. I don't think, as far as I'm aware, I don't think anybody here is struggling with drinking or smoking or drugs. And if you are, you should quit your job right now. Go work for the CIA because you're really, really good at hiding, like, your skills. Please go do that. Better this nation. Go do that or something else. Quit whatever you're doing. But as far as I know, nobody in here struggles with that. I wanted to do something and talk about something that if I was sitting in my seat this morning and Bob was up here talking, that it would be something that I could think about tomorrow when I go to work. It could be something I could think about the more I see things in the news and the more I see things kind of just fall apart in the world around me. So if you haven't guessed yet, that's what my subject's going to be today. It's going to be overtime for the Christian in 2021. And I think that's something that that certainly needs to be talked about. So with that, I'll go ahead and pray, and then we'll go ahead and jump into this. Lord, I just pray you give me the words to say to these people today. Lord, these are all my friends and these are my family, Lord. And I just pray you give them something from what you've given me. And I pray you just give Bob the words to say up in Ohio and give those people up there a blessing. And be with the Kennicutt family and the Alexander family as they head home this upcoming week. And just keep them safe and just keep all these people safe on their way home today after church. And just give us all a good rest of the day, Lord. And we love you so much. Amen. So, like I said, overtime in 2021 for the Christian is what my subject is. And basically, I don't think I have to say this very much. You and I, we have a job to do as Christians now, more than ever, but we have a job to do for Jesus Christ. You're not in regulation anymore when it comes to the Christian life. And what I mean by regulation is you're not playing, you're not in this period of time anymore that, you know, the Lord's allowed for you. You're in overtime. I like watching especially Chiefs football, but I like sports in general and just the competition aspect of it. I know, you know, I like going to the minor league hockey games and stuff when guys want to go to that. I'm good for a baseball game and stuff like that. But Chiefs football is my real big one that I like. But in all those different sports, you've got a set amount of time called regulation that you can play that game and you can try to win. We know in hockey you got like three periods, I think, of 20 minutes. You've got 9 innings in baseball. You've got 4 15-minute quarters in football. And in that period of time in each sport, I think it's 90 minutes in soccer. I don't even know if you're allowed to do overtime in soccer, so we'll just ignore that for now. But you've got that set amount of time called regulation where your job is literally to strategize, how am I going to win this game? That's what your job is. You can sit there and think, okay, well, we can take it easy here, ramp it up a little bit in the middle, and then coast the rest of the game. You can take it easy all the way up until the end. You can do anything you want. You can strategize and put whoever you want in the game as you want to try to win that game in regulation. But unfortunately for you, you're not in regulation anymore. Do you know what the times you're living in are? You are not in regulation anymore. You know, we all know that when you got that strategy aspect of that game, it's annoying for me especially because I can't, like I said, Chiefs football is the thing I like watching the most. And there's nothing more I can't stand than when you've got 8 to 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And we all know what 8 to 9 minutes is in football. That ought to be just 25 minutes if you're really being realistic with yourself, because you got the timeouts and the stoppage and everything else, right? When you've got 8 to 9 minutes left in football and the Chiefs are up by like 3 or 4 touchdowns, which is great. I like winning. I like seeing them win. I absolutely cannot stand wasting my time sitting there watching these bums run it up the middle for 6 inches and then figure out a way to get a first down and then run it up the middle again for 6 inches and just do that over and over again. It's boring. I don't like seeing these guys run straight up the middle, get stopped, everybody stands up, kind of just stands around, waits for the clock to run down, because that's what they're doing. They're trying to run the clock down, right? I can't stand it. I prefer watching overtime, especially if it's the Chiefs. I know some guys get stressed out by it because they're worrying if they're going to lose. I lose all interest at that point. I like watching these guys play in the overtime games because it really shows me three things. It shows me three things about my team or the Chiefs or whoever, you know. It shows me three things about all those guys playing. For one, it shows me if any of them have any grit. I watch some of these guys when they're in overtime and they know the game's on the line, and sometimes it's just a worthless game, something in December or October or something. It's not even a playoff game. I've watched these guys when they're in overtime, they will get blasted, and I mean absolutely blasted, something that should put any one of us in the hospital, and these guys will get right back up and they'll go right back to the line and do what they've got to do. Sometimes those guys absolutely, they can't breathe, they need oxygen on the sidelines, and they just put it off because they know they're running that hurry-up offense and they've got to do something. It really shows you who out there on that field has got some grit. The other thing it shows you who's determined, who has determination to actually win that game. Who's out there just to collect a paycheck, to get their game check at the end of the day, and you know what? It doesn't really matter if they go to the Super Bowl or the World Series. Who out there is determined by any means necessary to win that game? No matter how hard they get hit, no matter how well the other team's playing, who out there is determined to win that game? And then it shows you one other thing. It shows you awareness, most importantly. Every single guy out there is not only determined to win and shows grit, but every single guy out there is more than aware of where he's supposed to be and where everybody on his team is supposed to be. That quarterback will stand back there in the pocket, and he will know, I know where each one of these guys is going to go. But more importantly, I know that if they're covered and they can't run that original route, I know what their secondary route's going to be and where they're going to go. Everybody is aware of where everything and everyone is at. And that's what overtime does for you. You don't get to do that in just regular regulation time. You know, there used to be a time in this nation, and I guess in the world of Christianity, where you could strategize your life out before you did anything for Christ. There used to be a time where if you were my age, if you were 22 years old, I could have sat here and said, you know what, I'm going to do this instead. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a degree. After I get a degree, I'm going to go get a job. I'm going to get a really good paying job. Then while I'm in college and I'm at my, well, during college and when I get my good paying job, I'm going to go drink and party and do whatever the heck I want to do and kind of get the nice little feeling that you get and the experiences you got to have of the world. I can go out and do that. After that, once I lay up a bunch of money for myself, maybe then I'll get married. And then maybe when I get married, maybe then I'll have kids. But I want to make sure my kids and my wife and myself are all comfortable and whatnot. And then after that, maybe just after that, when I've got everything I want, when I've strategized my life out, when regulation for me is set and I'm good and I'm comfortable, then maybe now I'll do something for Christ. You used to be able to do that in this nation. You don't have that option anymore. You don't have the option to look at your life and look over the next 20 years and say, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get comfortable and then I'll do something for Christ. You don't have that option anymore. Luke 21:32, we all know what that verse says. It says, this generation shall not pass away till all be fulfilled. And I'm not going to get too much into that, but we all know what the gist of that is. That's talking about when the nation of Israel in 1948 bloomed into an actual nation. That pretty much set us on the course of really the end times. That nation, the people born in 1948, are going to see the rapture of the church and everything else happen. Right? So we all know what that says. We also know that in Psalms 90:10, it says, the days of our years are 70. I guarantee, and what that means, if you don't know that, that means that the Bible literally told you, you're really only guaranteed, you're really only allotted 70 years for life. You're only allowed 70-something years for life. And it says, you know what else it says? It says anything past 70, it says you're going to spend that in labor and sorrow. So it's really not even worth going past 70 if you really want to look at it objectively. So the Bible says that you've got 70 years total, and anything past that, you're just going to spend that in labor and sorrow. Ask any of those folks down at the nursing home next time you guys go down. Don't be rude and do what I would do and come up and say, hey, what hurts today? You know, don't do that. Just go up and talk to them and say, hey, how are you doing? How'd you sleep last night? You know, how's your day going? I guarantee you, you'll get at least one who says, well, my knee hurts, or I didn't sleep very well last night, or, oh, well, this hurts, or, well, that hurts, or, you know, they're not enjoying it. I mean, like, they're there to be there, and, you know, I'm sure life is great for them and whatever, but they don't feel like you and I feel right now being younger. They don't have, you know, just a carefree attitude. They're in pain. They're laboring, and they're in sorrow. That's just a biblical truth. But knowing that, and if the Bible's true, which it is, if the Bible's true, do you know what the math is between 2021 and 1948? You know how many years it's been since then? It's a pretty shocking answer. Between 1948 and 2021, it's been 73 years. That's how long it's been. Somebody born in 1948 right now is 73 years. And you know what that tells me? That tells me that right now, on July 11th, 2021, I'm officially 3 years into overtime. That's a terrifying but yet exciting thought to think about. And knowing what Psalms 90 verse 10 says about overtime, overtime for the Christian, if the Bible's right, that you're only really allotted 70 years, if the Bible's right, that means that you and I as a Christian, anything over 70 years that now we have to serve in overtime for Christ, you're going to spend that in labor and sorrow. You're not going to spend it enjoying life. You're not going to, you shouldn't at least be spending it being comfortable and enjoying everything that's going on. You should at least be spending it in labor and sorrow. Do you understand how much against everybody in this room is? Well, I'm sorry. You know how much against the world is against everybody in this room and that Bible? Do you understand right now that I don't know if it's necessarily all schools, but at least right now I know in a lot of states and stuff, the push to literally brain, because it is, it's literally a push to brainwash your kids, to take any sense of church history away from them, to take any sense of just regular history of, you know, this country away from them, to literally tell them that they can be whatever they want, whether that's the other gender or whatever, to tell them that they ought to pretty much hate any sort of authority, they ought to hate you, they ought to hate any moral standard that they have in life. Do you understand the brainwashing process that your kids are pretty much up against in school today? Do you understand that you live in a world right now that demands, it doesn't ask, it doesn't ask. They used to say they would ask, but they don't anymore. They literally demand of you that you love things that are unlovable. That's what they're telling you to do. And if you don't, then they call you, they say you're not tolerant, and they're gonna come after you in every aspect of your life. They require tolerance of you, but they can't be tolerant of, you know, the fact that you just believe a book and what it says. They can't stand that. I'm real bad about getting up early and reading, so to compensate for that, and I should be, you know, I should change it and get up earlier, but to compensate for that, I just take my, I got one of those little black, I think Bob calls them the combat Bibles, I just got one of those, and I just take it to work every day in my lunchbox, and all I do is I read it on my break and my lunchtime. You ought to see some of the looks on these guys' face when you pull that thing out. I don't get up and pass tracts out or start reading out loud. I'll just be sitting there reading it, and these guys, you know, big eyes, they scoot away, you know, they don't want to be anywhere near it. And I have one guy ever, he asked me, he's like, hey, are you reading the good book at lunch? Book. And I was like, the good book? What are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, are you reading the good book at lunch? And I was like, I guess, what makes it good to you? You know, I don't know. Like, tell me what you think. I don't know what he's talking about, but they get terrified. They don't even want to call it the Bible, man. It's too scary of a thought for them. But do you understand that the world around you, they are so against everything in this book? And you know what? If you're trying to do anything, and I mean anything, I don't care if it's praying for your lunch, I don't care if it's just keeping a good attitude at work and having a good work ethic, I don't care if it's not cussing or talking the way they do, I don't care what it is. If you're trying to do even something bare minimum for Jesus Christ, this world is so against you that you ought to be laboring in sorrow and you ought to be straight up worn out. You ought to be ready to go home right now, not even have to go to work tomorrow. Do you know how many times when I was working overtime, I'd be driving to work at, you know, we were starting at 6 a.m., so I'm getting up at 5 something in the morning, maybe even earlier than that to go to work. You know how many times I'd be driving to work, and I literally just sit and think, I was like, Lord, I am so worn out with going to work right now and so worn out with overtime. If you would just do me a favor and come right now and just take me out of here, drift me over to the right-hand lane, run the truck off into the ditch somewhere. I don't even need anybody hurt. Just drive it off, make it look like an accident, let them deal with the, you know, the mental trauma of what they find on the inside of there whenever I'm gone. I don't care. But just pull me out of here right now. You know why I thought like that? It wasn't because I'm some suicidal maniac. It's because I was so worn out with going to work every day. I was so worn out, and I was literally just laboring, and I felt like I was in sorrow because I was so sick and tired of going to work. That is exactly how right now, if you're doing even this much for Christ, even this much, this whole world is so against you and I, you ought to be worn out trying to do something for Jesus Christ today. It's just that simple. You know a great picture of somebody who was actually in labor and sorrow, not only in their ministry, but their entire life, and who knew when he was in overtime? If you haven't guessed yet, it's Jesus Christ. Go ahead and come over here to Matthew 26. Matthew 26, and I'll read something over here about Jesus Christ. Christ understood that he was not only in overtime in this passage, but he was laboring and he was in sorrow the entire time because he understood what was going on. Matthew 26, verse 36 is where I'll go ahead and start. Verse 36, it says, "Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and said unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me." Let me ask you something. It says there in verse 37 and 38, it says that he began to be sorrowful and very heavy. And then 38 says that his soul was exceeding sorrowful. What on earth makes you think you have the right not to feel like that when Jesus Christ did for no reason? When you really look back at the story and the timeline of what's going on, you realize Christ really didn't have to go to Gethsemane. He really didn't have to do that. He had to do really the Last Supper and then just wait to be betrayed and then go to the cross and pay for your sins. But do you know why he went to Gethsemane? He went to Gethsemane because he was so burdened and he was so sorrowful and torn up as a man because he knew what he had to do. And he was going there to see if, hey, is there any way I can maybe, is there another way I can do this without having to literally separate myself from God the Father, the first thing that he ever, you know, the first time he's ever had to do that. That's what he went to Gethsemane for. And he was sorrowful and he was heavy over that. If Christ felt like that, why on earth do we not feel like that? Why are you really comfortable right now and life is really great when you're 3 years into overtime, but Jesus Christ, for no reason at all, had to feel like this? What are you holding back to be a little bit more comfortable? Are you holding back your testimony and you don't have the guts to pray for your lunch when you're at work? Are you holding back maybe the fact that you ought to talk different and act different than the people at work or at school or whatever it is? What on earth are you holding back to be just a little bit more comfortable? And how selfish and how rude and just a jerk move of it is it of us to make Jesus Christ feel like this when he didn't have to, and you and I are just going to pass that on and pass the buck later on down the road? It's absolutely despicable to look at that and compare that to us. Verse 39 says, and it's a good one, it says, "And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." Are you willing, if you are doing something for Jesus Christ, are you willing to go even just a little further for Jesus Christ's sake? I mean, he was for you. You know, he didn't have to be there in the first place. But I mean, he's not only dealing with the emotional, I guess, feelings of what he knows he's about to go through, he's dealing with that and he's still going a little further. Do you understand? I don't think that he was really that torn up about the physical torture aspect of it like I would be. That would be my biggest concern. I don't think that's what he was that worn out about. I mean, I think he understood, you know, they're going to rip my back open where you can see my ribs and my organs and stuff. Then they're going to put a dirty piece of wood that's got splinters and stuff, and they're going to rub it all up and down that thing and make me carry it all the way up there. Then they're going to hang me up on a cross and sit down and watch, like the Bible says, like I'm some TV show. You know, just watch me get tortured up there. Then they're going to strip me naked, embarrass me, throw dice from my garments and stuff like that. I think he knew all that. That's not what was really bothering him, though. He was sorrowful and he was heavy because of the fact that he knew he was going to be separated from God for the first time. And that bothered him. But yet, even so, even still with all that going on, he was willing to go a little further. I don't think I need to really say much about it, but we all know one thing, which is Christians today aren't willing to go, let alone even go a little farther. It's hard enough to get them to get up and just pray, get them to just have a testimony at work or at school, get them to get up and just, and maybe take a little bit of abuse or take something from somebody, just get made fun of and be able to walk it off and smile about it. You can't hardly get them to do that, let alone get them to, you know, actually really do something for Christ, really actually get them involved in the ministry or get them to, you know, invest themselves into something in this church. And, you know, right there it says Jesus Christ, he was willing to go a little further for you. Are you willing to go a little further for him? And then verse 40 through 46, it says, "And he cometh to the disciples and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And he went away, and that's a good verse too that you ought to memorize and, you know, put on your window or something like that. That way you see it every day. Then verse 42, it says, "He went away again in the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy." Notice the difference there. It said over here in verse 30, 37, it says that he was sorrowful and very heavy. You know the only heaviness that the disciples had? It says their eyes were heavy. Jesus Christ's heart itself was so heavy because it was burdened about you and where your soul was going to go when it died. When you died, where your soul was going to go. He was so torn up about that that his heart was heavy. And the only heavy thing on the disciples' heart and the only heavy thing on our heart today is your eyes are heavy and you're asleep. That is the only thing right now that is heavy on Christians' hearts and minds, is you're just ready to go to sleep. You don't even want to go to work or do anything for him. Then verse 44, it says, "And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to the disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hand of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me." He doesn't even bother with them anymore at this point. Most of God's people today, in overtime at least, are just asleep. That's the state of all of them right now. They're asleep. They don't know what's going on around them. You need to wake up. You need to wake up and look at what's going on in the world around you and what they're moving to do and what they're moving to try to take away from you or maybe even do to you here in I don't know how long. But you need to wake up and see what's really going on in the world around you today. Wake up. Stop being asleep. Stop being okay with Jesus Christ literally walking up to you in your spiritual life and just saying, just sleep on now. Take your rest. It don't matter. Do whatever you want to do. You're not doing anything anyhow. You're not going to do anything when I wake you up. So just keep sleeping. Enjoy it. Wait till I come back and I'll deal with you later. Don't be okay with Jesus Christ saying that to you. Get up. Wake up, look around, see what's going on in your school, see what's going on at work, see what's going on in the country you live in, and be aware of what's happening. Just a great example in Jesus Christ over here of somebody who knew he was in overtime, who knew what was going on, and he was aware and he was awake for it, and is probably the best example you'll get of somebody who really just put it all out on the line for you. But you know, the Bible, it's got plenty of good examples of people who were actually on the job. People like you and me, people who weren't, you know, God incarnate in the flesh, people who are human just like us and who have problems and whatnot, but they were on the job and they knew what they were doing. One of my favorite ones is over in 1 Corinthians 16. Go ahead and come on over there and we'll check that out, and we'll be over there for just a second. But 1 Corinthians chapter 16 is another really good spot where it shows you some guys who were actually on the job, who understood there was something to do, who understood that they were on overtime and they didn't have very much time left and they needed to get something done. We'll go ahead and start in verse 13. Verse 13. Verse 13, it says, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong." This doesn't have anything to do really with just the fact of being on the job. But that's another good verse that, especially if you're a man, you ought to have memorized or at least have in your mind at some point. You live in a world today that absolutely despises the idea of actually being a man and doing something for Christ and or just doing something manly in general. Be a man. Look at what's going on around you. Watch like that verse says. Watch what's going on. Stand up. Don't sit down and just take it like, you know, like they expect you to and stuff. Stand up. Do something. Be willing to take one off the chin just for no reason. I was watching last night. I was just watching the UFC fight deal, and some goofy kid in green hair had the guts to walk for 3 rounds and take like 200 shots right off the face, man. You ought to just be willing to do that for Christ. You don't need a win. You don't need to beat anybody necessarily. Let eternity take care of that. But just be a man and stand there and be willing to take 200 off the face for Christ. Do something, man. Be a man and be strong. Not many men are left. But verse 14, it says, "Let all things be done in charity. I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints." We all know this verse too, but I'm going to ask the very obvious question. Are you addicted to the ministries of this church? Is there something here that if it got taken away from you, a ministry, you know, something you're doing here, is there something that if it got taken away with you, you simply just couldn't go without? It would absolutely destroy your life if, you know, you got a discipleship group taken away from you, or if maybe, you know, we stopped going and we stopped doing lifelines or we stopped doing something. Have you wholly given yourself to something? Let me ask you this. I think it's about a year and a half now, and I understand there were some aspects of, I don't want to say legal, but I know they had some new standards and stuff like that down there. But did anybody here actually get sorrowful and get a little beat up that you can't go down to Restart anymore? Or do you enjoy your Sunday afternoons? Is it nice now that you get to leave church every Sunday? You know you don't have to go down there and mess with those dirty old bums and stuff like that. And look, I get it. It wasn't the greatest experience. I didn't like going down there every single day, you know, every other Sunday and doing that. I'll be honest, there were some times I just didn't really want to. It doesn't mean you're always going to enjoy, you know, what you've got to do. But you know what? You love it and you do it, and it hurts to get taken away because you're addicted to it. You're wholly given to it. You know, I know there were some people here who were actually invested down there with some of the people we were working with, some of the people we got to talk to. If it did anything for you, it taught you how to be a servant at least, dragging mattresses out of rooms and moving stuff down there, throwing away trash. Who in the world wants to do that? But does it bother anybody that you can't do Restart anymore because certain circumstances came up? Or do you enjoy it? Is it a relief? Are you glad that, oh, well, good, there's one more thing off my plate? No, it's one less thing you can do for Christ. That's what it is. It's not one less thing off your plate. Are you wholly given to something in this church, some ministry, something? I don't even care if it's just praying for somebody. Are you wholly given to praying for people on the prayer list? You got to have something. If something got taken away from you in this church, would it absolutely destroy you because you're simply just addicted to it? I'm not a person who's got a lot of, I don't have a lot of like hobbies and stuff like that. You know, I know some guys enjoy, I guess, you know, like disc golf or something like that. And I'd like to get into it, but I've never like been crazy about pursuing stuff like that. My two big things that always just entertained me whenever I wasn't here at work was hunting and fishing. That's why, you know, at the beginning of this thing, I told you I was playing around in the woods as a kid. I just liked it. It was always fun for me. I always enjoyed it. But I know myself well enough, and this is not putting AJ on a pedestal and, you know, saying, well, you know, be like AJ. That's not what this is. I can only speak for myself. I know myself well enough that if I was presented with a week-long, all-expenses-paid, guaranteed you're going to kill an elk in Alaska trip, right? If I was presented with that and it happened to fall in the same week of camp, I wouldn't have a problem choosing where I'd be. Amen. I know I really wouldn't. Because at the end of the day, I enjoy hunting and fishing as a hobby. I'm not addicted to it, though. I enjoy it a lot. And I'm sure you guys all have things you enjoy and you like to do. But I'm not addicted to it. I know what I'm addicted to. I know that the whole time I'd be up there in Alaska doing whatever I'm doing, I'd be thinking, well, they're probably going to do an activity now, and then they're going to go do... I couldn't even enjoy myself because I'm so dang addicted to this place and doing stuff that we have here. I absolutely... I couldn't leave it. And I just know myself, and I can't speak for you, but I know the people here who have invested into me, and I know the ministries and the things that I've gotten invested in and that I put time and work into. And it's not worth giving up anything else for it. Is there something like that here for you that you want to give up? You want to give it up for anything, no matter what it is that they presented with you? Are you addicted to the ministries of this church? And then verses 16 through 18, it says that you submit yourselves unto such and to everyone that helpeth us and laboreth. I am glad of the coming of Stephanas and Fortunatus and Achaeus, for that which was lacking on your part they have supplied. For they have refreshed my spirit and yours, therefore acknowledge ye them that are such. Have you supplied what others in this church and what others in Christianity are lacking today? Have you supplied that? Are you lifting more than your fair share? And yeah, I said it right. Are you lifting an unfair amount because other people won't pick it up? Amen. Are you willing to do that? Or are you just going to say, no, you know what? I've got my family, my guy I'm discipling, and my job, and my life, and that's all I'm going to be willing to take because that's the fair amount, and everybody else needs to pick up theirs. Or are you willing to instead pick up an unfair amount of work because others aren't doing it? You've got three things about these different guys you see here. Verse 16, it says that you submit yourself unto such and to everyone that helpeth with us and laboreth. You know what that says right there? This is just a really good thing to know, and something I got to learn really early on. You know what your job is if you're just getting into this and you don't really know what's going on? It's a really easy one. Just submit to yourself to the guys who already know what's going on and are doing something. I told you I'm in an apprenticeship for work. You know, when you show up to work the first day as an apprentice, when you show up as a first year, they don't expect you to know a thing. And I mean, not a thing. I'm working with a guy right now who, he's a first-year apprentice. This kid doesn't know how to read a tape measure. and he's in construction. So, I mean, like, that's like not knowing how to type and going into, like, writing books or something like that. You know, so he's not in a good spot. But, you know, nobody's given him garbage about that. Nobody's trashed him on that and made fun of him. They just, you know what they told him? They said, go out and get one that's got the labels on it so that way you can start learning. And after you learn, then we'll get you a normal one and stuff like that, and you cannot be made fun of near as much. You know, it's okay. But they don't expect you to know much. The kid doesn't know how to read a tape measure. He doesn't know the difference between, you know, sizes of pipe and whatever. I'll say, hey, go get, you know, this type of pipe, this size. The kid just glazed, you know, glazed in his eyes. He doesn't know what's going on. But they don't expect him to know that. And they didn't expect me to know that when I got in. You know what impressed them the most and what they wanted to see the most? They cared not about what I knew or how fast I could learn. They cared if I was willing to show up, watch, ask questions if I didn't know what was going on, and keep my mouth shut. That's what they wanted. They didn't want me talking unless I said, hey, I see you're doing this. Why are you doing it like that? And then go quiet after that and let them explain it to you and then watch and learn, right? That's all they wanted. They didn't expect me to get out there and just start blabbing my mouth and talking about everything I thought I knew. I needed to show up, watch, and listen, and don't talk near as much. And, you know, that's the key to really to getting into the ministry and figuring out what you're doing at a sped up level. Show up, get underneath some of these guys who are doing something, get underneath their ministry and watch them and learn from them and just be quiet and watch. Submit yourself to them and don't try to act like you know what you're doing when you don't. That's all you've got to do. That's the first thing you see about these guys is they were able to submit to those who were already out there getting after it and doing the work. The second thing you see is over here in verse 17. It says, well, I'll just read the last part, but it says, for that which was lacking on your part, they have supplied. I've got a quote from a preacher. I don't know who he is. I really wish I did because I would have put it down in here. But I've got a quote from a preacher that says, ambition is wanting recognition, and it's the flesh. But a real desire to be used of God is to be of no reputation and to do whatever you can. Amen. That's God. That's the quote I got from this guy. Are you part of the small remnant that's actually doing the work? And not only that, you'll know you're a part of that small remnant if you're just getting out there and you're doing what you got to do, not so that way you can get shouted out from the pulpit on Sunday morning, not so that way somebody can come over and just slap you on the back after church or whatever, or after you get done doing what you're doing. You're just doing it because you need to do it. That's the real way that you serve the Lord and make up for that lack of service from other people. Just keep your head down. Go do what you've got to do. Go do what others won't do. And just let the Lord take care of it in the long run. And you know what that does? You look at verse 18. You just doing that. You just making up for the lack of service of other people. It does really two things. For one, it says in verse 18, it says, for they have refreshed my spirit and yours. You know that you doing that and just doing what you ought to do and doing more than your fair share and making up for others' lack of work, you know that that's not only just a refreshment to Bob, seeing you just get out there and take care of it and not saying a thing and not complaining about it. You know that's just a refreshment to other people around you. And you know what? I can talk about that and I can speak about that from experience. I can. Because I grew up here watching several men walk over and they looked at this pile of stuff that another guy had just shrugged off. You know, this guy's family, somebody they're discipling, this guy's wife, whatever. You know, this guy's testimony, all this stuff. Somebody just dumped it right over here. And I watched multiple men in this church just walk over, pick it up, throw it on their back, walk it over here, right across the finish line, put it down, kind of, you know, roll their shoulders around and, you know, get loosened up again, pick another piece up, walk this guy's family over here, put it down, and make sure all that work that he should have done, that was his responsibility, I watched multiple men in this church just walk over and make up for that guy's lack of service. And you know what it did for me as a kid? It refreshed me. Because I saw it. I saw guys who just, they were playing the game. And they were, you know, they were showing off when they were here and whatever. But in reality, the other 5 days of the week or whatever it was, everything was just a mess. I saw that. And it was refreshing to me to see other guys who had no business taking care of that guy's kids, that guy's family, that guy's responsibility, anything. They didn't have any responsibility to that, and they had no business doing it. Instead, they just walked over, they picked it up, and they walked it to the finish line. And a lot of those guys right there, you know, somebody in their family came out of it. Something good happened because somebody else was willing to make up for a lack of service on somebody else's part. And it was refreshing to me. It was refreshing to see that. And it did something for me as a kid. And then you look at the end of verse 18, it says, therefore acknowledge ye them that are such. if you're worried about not getting recognition anyhow, don't worry about it. It'll come with time. You may not get it right when it happens, but the Bible promises you that, you know what, in time you'll get acknowledgement. Somebody will see what you did, and somebody will see what, you know, you were putting yourself through, and they'll acknowledge it. The kid that you helped out, or the person that you helped out or you were working with, they'll acknowledge the fact that you were the one that really stepped up to the plate and took care of that lack of service. And then the last thing you want to see here is in verse 12. I didn't read it, but we'll go ahead and read it here. It says, as touching our brother Apollos, I greatly desired him to come unto you with the brethren. But his will was not at all to come at this time, but he will come when he shall have a convenient time. Is now a convenient time for you to do something for Christ? I've said it multiple times already. We're in overtime. You're not in regulation anymore. You're in overtime. Is it convenient now for you to do something for Jesus Christ? Or instead, is it convenient maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe next month, or shoot, maybe even next year? When is it going to be convenient for you to do something for Christ? I heard a great quote just from Ruckman multiple times where he says, only one life will soon be passed, only what's done for Christ will last. You know how scary of a thing that is to think about? What do you do every day that's actually going to last in eternity because it was done for Christ? That's a terrifying thought to think about. Is it convenient now for you to do something for Christ, something that's actually going to last all throughout eternity? You're running out of time. You're running out of time, and you need to take advantage of the time you have left. Is the ministries of this church too inconvenient for you and your schedule? Are souls out there who need help, are they too inconvenient for you and your schedule and what you would like to do? Is your family, which should be the most convenient thing, is your family itself an inconvenience for you because you rather do your own thing and learn about, you know, pretty much make yourself, put yourself on some high pedestal or something, but in reality you just leave your family in the dirt? Is your family an inconvenience for you as well? You know what? There's no other good way to say it, but this is the truth about that. Your selfishness is the real inconvenience of what's going on. Your selfishness is the real inconvenience for the guys who I watched growing up who walked over there and picked up your lack of service. That's what the real inconvenience is. It's not you. It's not your schedule. It's not the ministries of this church or all the things, reading your Bible or whatever. It's your selfishness that's the real inconvenience in the world we live in right now, and especially for Christianity. Amen. When will it be convenient for you to do something for Jesus Christ? You're running out of time. You're running on overtime right now. You're officially 3 years in. I don't know how much left we got. When is it going to be convenient for you to do something for Christ? I've got one guy in my Bible who I've got notes next to a lot of people in my Bible and whatnot, but I've got one guy in my Bible who every time I turn and my Bible opens to that when I'm trying to turn somewhere else, it kind of jolts me. It's like getting a little shock of electricity or something, just because the notes I have next to this guy's name and just what I know about him is so exciting to me. But I've got a guy who's got plenty of notes and marks next to his name, and he's only mentioned two times in your Bible, both in Philippians. And when I saw this guy the first time when I was growing up, Philippians chapter 2, if you guys want to turn over there. When I saw this guy, when I just came through my Bible and stuff, I knew immediately when I read about him that this guy needed to be, maybe not yours, but A.J. Patrick's role model. I knew that immediately. Not some, Navy SEAL or Green Beret or Ranger or SAS guy or anything like that. As much as I like reading and learning about those guys, I knew that it wasn't supposed to be some spec ops guy or some athlete. I needed this guy to be my role model. And this guy is where my sermon comes from. And again, this guy is somebody who understood what overtime really was for Jesus Christ. One of the few that I found. So Philippians chapter 2, verses 25 through 30. I'll go ahead and read it. It says, "Yet I supposed it," and this is Paul talking, "Yet I supposed it necessary to send unto you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion and laborer and fellow soldier, but your messenger, and that he ministered to my wants. For he was longed after you all and was full of heaviness." Seems somebody else was heavy for the right reasons as well here, not just their eyes heavy. "Because that ye had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick, nigh unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. You imagine the greatest Christian in the world saying that about you? That if something happened to you, it would make him have sorrow upon sorrow? This is quite, pretty good guy to look at and take some examples from. Verse 28, It says, I sent him therefore the more carefully, that when you see him again, you may rejoice, and that I may be the less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such in reputation. Because for the work of Christ, he was nigh unto death, not regarding his life to supply your lack of service towards me. This man's name is Epaphroditus. This is a man who meant business in your Bible. This is a man who saw what was going on, saw the need of work that needed to be done, and he just did it. You notice how over in 1 Corinthians 16, you've got three people who are supplying the lack of service of an entire church, which is still impressive, don't get me wrong, that's a remnant for sure. You've got three different people over there supplying the lack of service of an entire church over in 1 Corinthians 16. You know what the difference between 1 Corinthians 16 and Philippians 2 is? Here, you've got one man supplying the lack of service of an entire church. You had three over there. This guy took it to a whole nother level, and it's just one man. This church had one man to stand in the gap, one man to serve, and one man to suffer. And he was willing to do that. He was okay with doing that. This guy knew what it was like to be Christ-like. This guy wasn't putting himself on the back burner and watching out for himself. He was one man who was willing to stand up and do anything and everything he could to make up for the lack of service of this church. You look at verse 25, and verse 25, it shows you that he was a good soldier for Christ. It says that he was Paul's brother, companion, laborer, and fellow soldier. You know what you got there? You've got a brother for hard times, is what this guy was. You've got a companion for good times when things are great. You've got a laborer for the work when things really need to get done, somebody who can just shut up and get out there and do what they've got to do. And then you've got a fellow soldier for combat, for when things really, really get heated and things are really, really ugly and people are turning on each other and there's blood and there's guts and everybody's just cutting each other's throats in the ministry because they don't know what's going on and they don't want to get hurt themselves. This guy was able to be a fellow soldier and he was able to stand his own in combat. I really hope, I would hope that in eternity I could find this out. I really hope somebody here would hopefully one day be able to say that about A.J. Patrick, that he was not only a brother for the really hard times, but he was a companion for the good times. He was able to shut his mouth and work whenever he needed to like a laborer. And you know what? When things got really, really hairy and things got really ugly, he was a good soldier. I really hope somebody would be able to say that about me one day like Paul did about Epaphroditus. Then number two. Number two is also found in verse 25, where it says that he ministered to my wants. This man thinks beyond the mission. He takes care of his fellow soldiers. He takes care of these guys, not only in their needs. You know, he doesn't just step up and just do what somebody needs, which is discipleship and, you know, getting a baseline start in the Bible. That's not all he does. You know, he doesn't just do the bare necessities. This guy looks a little farther than that. He takes care of somebody's wants. There's a lot of things that you and I need as Christians. We do. There's a lot of things. And this church does a great job of supplying it. You need Bible study. You need, you know, Sunday morning. You need Institute. You need all the things that Bob offers. But you know what you don't need? You don't need to go to Worlds of Fun as a church and have a good time. You don't need to go to Branson as a church to have a good time. But you know what? This church and Bob supplies some wants for you. You would like to do that. Yeah, it's fun. You want to go to Branson. You want to go to Worlds of Fun. That's the type of guy that Epaphroditus was. He was not only willing to show up and supply people's needs, he was willing to show up and supply their wants. You look back in the Bible at David back there at Bethlehem, and him and his mighty men are standing around, and you know they're talking and whatever, and we all probably know the story back there where David was wanting that water from Bethlehem. You realize David didn't need that water? Put it into perspective. He was the king. The guy had all the food he wanted. I guarantee you he had plenty of water. Shoot, he probably had plenty of grape juice and everything else that he could want over there in that camp. But him and his mighty men were standing around and they were talking one day. And I'm sure it was just a regular conversation where he just said, you know, I know we're going down tomorrow and I know we're going to take it, but I'm about to go to bed. And to be quite honest, guys, I just like some of that water. I miss it. I grew up with it. It's got some good memories in it. I enjoy it. It brings back some stuff from my childhood. I just want some water. I just want some water from Bethlehem. And he didn't need it. But you know what those mighty men did? David went on the bed, and those mighty men stood around, I guarantee you, and they talked, and they were like, let's do the math here. One of us went down into a pit in the snow and killed a lion on our own, and then proceeded to kill a guy with his own weapon. Then another one of us, we can't let go of this sword still because it's still clasped to our hand because we killed a bunch of guys over some beans. And then some others of us, we killed a whole group of Philistines for no good reason, just on our own because everybody else wanted to leave. What on earth is preventing us from going down and getting some water? The guy wants it. I know he doesn't need it, but I mean, he's been good to us. He's taking care of us. He's a good guy. Why don't we just go get him some water? And that's what they did. They went down there and they got David the water he wanted. And we know that, you know, when they came back and whatnot, that it was a really good deal for them. And David poured that out to the Lord, and it was a good moment for Israel. But you notice something about that story? It wasn't the regular group of soldiers that Israel had that went down there and got it. It wasn't just the regular encampment of Israel that said, well, you know, we like David, and yeah, he's protected us, and he's done a really good job of being a captain and stuff like that. Let's all just go down and get the water. That's not what happened. You had a very small remnant of mighty men, and should I say women in this church, who went down there and they just supplied somebody's wants. Something that David didn't even need, they went down there and they supplied that for him. That's what they did. It's the mighty men and women in this church who really actually not only minister to people's needs, the things that they need to survive, the things that they need to grow as a Christian. It's the mighty men and women in this church who not only minister to their needs, but they minister to their wants. They get uncomfortable willingly, so that way others can be comfortable and actually enjoy, you know, growing up and trying to learn and get something. They're the ones who are really getting done something for the Lord. The ones who go out there and put their needs and put their wants on the sidelines just to give you something that you don't necessarily even need, just something that you want. Those are the people who are really getting something done for the Lord. And you see that example back there with David and his mighty men. And you look at this verse over here in Philippians. Epaphroditus, mind you, he was sick. The guy was on the verge of dying. He was sick, but he still was willing to put Paul first and put his needs and his wants on the side. And then lastly, the last thing about Epaphroditus is that he was a selfless soldier doing whatever he could. Verse 30 says, because for the work of Christ he was nigh unto death, not regarding his life to supply your lack of service towards me. This man was on the verge of dying, but he was still working and doing something for Christ. He knew that he was expendable. He saw the lack of service from God's people, and he put that lack of service and what needed to be done in one hand, and he put his life, his physical life, his real life. You know, the guy was sick. He put that lack of service of something eternal in this hand, and then he put his physical life of something temporary right here, and this ended up weighing out. He ended up choosing to go and make up for that lack instead of putting his own life in the better category, should you say, of thinking that was more important. I've got a note here about the guy. I said I've got plenty of notes on this guy. But, you know, I've got a note next to verse 30. And I don't even remember when I put this in. It may have been on a Thursday night or something. I don't know when it was. But it was certainly whenever I first came across this. And this was long before I even, you know, had this sermon ever as an idea in mind. But my note here, it says, Lord, give me some overtime, I'll do what no one else will. Is that the attitude that you and I have today? Epaphroditus certainly did. This guy's life was literally on the line, and he said, Lord, I am willing to do whatever it is. I don't care if it's set up tables. I don't care if it's move chairs. I don't care if it's take out the trash. I don't care if it's simply just to pray for people. I don't care what it is. I need something to do, and I know other people around here aren't doing it, so I'm going to make up for it. Ask the Lord to do something in this overtime we're in. Don't just stand around and be found not doing anything and just kind of twiddling your thumbs until the Lord comes back. Ask the Lord for something to do. Put your life, your wants, your plans on the back burner and get something done for Jesus Christ while you still can. You and I are running out of time. I don't know how else to say it. Look around you in the world. Go home and just search up some of the stuff online about just to get a good idea of what's going on. You don't have 20-something years. You don't have any of that. You're on overtime already. You're running out of time. Now, in closing, I've got 7 quick things that require our service in overtime for 2021. I couldn't get up here and just talk about how we're running out of time and we're on overtime without at least saying some things that require that overtime, without talking about some things that there's a lack of service right now in the world we live in. Because there are some things right now that Christians and people, they don't want to do. And so I've got 7 things here that require your service and overtime if you're really wanting to do something for Jesus Christ. All right, now the first one is standard, but it's also one of the most important, if not the most important, and that's our families. Fathers and mothers, the deck is simply stacked against you. And I don't pretend to stand up here and talk like I know what I'm really talking about, because I'm not a dad. But I do know what I see in the news, and I do know what, you know, I see going on. The deck is simply stacked against you. You know, there was a time in this country where you could trust that you could send your kid to school and they wouldn't come home hating your guts, and they would actually think that there's some good things in life and there's some moral standards. There was a time you could do that. There was a time you could kind of rely on the schools to turn your kid into a halfway intelligent human being who was going to do the right thing in society. You can't do that anymore. You know, there was a time where you could send your kids to church, and I'm not talking about this, I'm just talking about overall, but you know, there was a time where you could send your kids to church and you knew it was the right thing to do. You guys have heard Bob's testimony up here before about his parents. His parents, you know, even if they didn't necessarily go to the church they were sending him to, they still knew it was a good spot for him to go, and they sent him over there. There was a time in this country where that could, you know, you could do that and your kid would turn out somewhat of what they needed to be. That's not the case anymore. You're in overtime. It's your job to put in the extra work. It's your job to make them into what God wants them to be, to establish some sort of moral standard and tell them what the Bible actually says about what's going on. You can't just send them off and hope for the best anymore. Everything is so stacked against those kids, it's your job to put in the work. Work overtime for your family. It's supposed to be exhausting for a reason. And then husbands, obviously. Build something into your wives that will sustain them with these years to come. Overtime will simply wear them out. It'll wear us out, but it will wear your wife out looking at what's going on and looking at, you know, the uncertainty in the future. Build something into your wives. Work some overtime into your spouses, and especially into your kids. Joshua 24:15, we know what that says. It's Joshua when he says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Is that your attitude, or is it just hanging up in your kitchen somewhere? Because I know we all probably got one in our house. Is it just hanging up in your kitchen or in your house? Or is that truly your attitude? If things really hit the fan, are you really willing to stand up and say, no, I'm sorry. You know what? No, I'm not even sorry. I'm glad it irritates you. I hope you get irritated, and I hope you stay like that. But we're gonna serve the Lord. We're going to do what we need to do. They're not asking for any tolerance out of you. Don't be tolerant out of them. It's fine. Noah had, in the end, all he had was his family. We know the comparison of Noah's days and today. Are you going to have at least your family in the end of this thing? If you did, then you did a good job. Congrats, you did a good job if you have your family in the end of this thing like Noah did. Focus on your family and put the overtime in with your family. The second thing is your conversation, or as some of us would know better, your testimony. Do you realize people are watching you now more than they ever have in their life? Why do you think it terrifies guys at my work when they see me pull out a Bible to read? Do you understand that you literally just not talking the way that they talk at work is enough for them to, you know, their ears to go up and for them to get curious? People are watching you now more than ever. Are you talking the right way? Are you acting the right way? Or can they tell that it's a facade? Can they tell that something's off? Can they tell that you're just playing the game and you're just trying to move up through the ranks of life and strategize your way through life so you can get where you want to be before you ever do something for Christ? People are watching you and I now more than later. Genesis 34:30. I've done a devotion on this before just because coming through the Bible and stuff, I noticed that this is just one of those spots that when you see the wording and see what the Lord chose to use, it really makes you understand why a kid could get it, but especially just how descriptive it is. Genesis 34:30, it says, "And Jacob said to Simon and Levi," this is after they kind of went and did something stupid, and it says, "And Jacob said unto Simon and Levi, ye have troubled me, and to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land." Does your testimony stink right now among people at work? And when you walk by, do they laugh and probably go, "Oh yeah, I'm sure he was at church yesterday. Yeah, I'm sure he was. Oh, okay, ha ha, he he. You know, we'll make fun of him. I'm sure he'll join in the jokes here later on at lunch. I'm sure that, you know, he'll get mad at something and you know, bang his finger or whatever, and then he'll just go off cussing and stuff like that. Does your testimony stink among those at school, at work? Put in the overtime on how you act. Think more now about how you act and what you say than you ever have in your life, because it's necessary. Put in the overtime on your conversation and your testimony. All right, the third thing. Put in the overtime with your personal time with Christ. If you aren't spending more time with him now that it's all getting a lot worse, you will not last. Get closer to Jesus Christ. I'm going to turn, you guys don't have to come over here, but Luke 10:38 is probably one of my favorite spots. if not one of my favorite spots for sure in the Bible. And it's that story over there of Mary and Martha. And over there, I'll just go ahead and read it, verses 38 through 42. It says, Now it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Do you realize in life right now, especially in overtime, if the Bible's true that you know you're supposed to be laboring in sorrow right now, if you're a Christian doing something for Christ, do you realize that you are already cumbered about with a lot in the world you live in? You're cumbered about with work. You've got to deal with just whatever's going on there. I know you guys know your jobs better than I know your jobs, but you've got whatever's going on there, whatever your boss requires out of you and what the people say and how they talk there. It's cumbering. It's exhausting to go and deal with every day. You're worried about money. You don't know what the heck's going to happen to your savings or your retirement or anything else. While you may as well just forget about it. You're not going to be here to retire, so it's okay. But you're worried about money. Things are getting more expensive. You're worried about work. You're worried about whatever the heck the government's going to do next to mess with you and mess with your, you know, just your everyday life. You're worried about your kids, what's happening to them at school and just in their daily life. You're worrying about your marriage. That's cumbersome. You know, you think about it all the time because you don't know what's coming next. But you know what Jesus Christ said here? It said that Martha was careful and troubled about many things. And you know what his solution was to her? He said in verse 42, he said, one thing is needful. And Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. There's one thing that's needful in life right now, especially in overtime where we're at, and that's a relationship with Jesus Christ. I've got a note. I don't even know when I made this one, but I've got it just in this. Well, I keep it in my bag just in case I ever want to look at it and stuff. But it says Luke 10:42, and I've gotten quotations. It says, but one thing is needful, and I've got an arrow pointing to that, and it says, your salvation. And then I've got another arrow pointing to this passage, and it says, your issue. And it says, my issue is, thou art careful and troubled about many things. And I got something here that says, only one thing in life is needful, and that's fellowship with your Savior. Let him settle the rest. That is the only thing that's needful for you and me. Get your personal time with Jesus Christ worked out. Make sure you're closer to him today than you were yesterday, and so on for tomorrow. Because if you're not, things are going to get worse, and you're not going to be able to survive that overtime. Put in the work with Jesus Christ now. It's the time's over to play games and just show up here and enjoy what's going on. Although that's great, it's time to get a real relationship with Christ. Put in that personal time with him. All right, now number four. Number four is prayer. Put in some overtime with the Lord in prayer. Get closer to him by talking with him more. That may soon be all you have. It really may. Psalms 9 verses 9 through 10 is a great spot over there where it's just talking about David going through a rough time. And that's really one of the only things he had was his relationship with Christ and the fact that he could talk with him. It may be the only thing you have in I don't know how long, but I would venture to say it'd be pretty soon. It's all Hannah had. You look back there at Hannah, she didn't really have a husband to help her out in that situation she was going through where she was all emotionally torn up. She didn't have a preacher really to go to. The guy thought she was drunk when she was so upset about it. She didn't have anybody to go to besides the Lord. Put in some overtime like she did with the Lord in some prayer. It'll do you a lot of good, and it'll help you especially in these last days. All right, then the fifth thing. Put in some overtime with the unsaved world, the people you work with, the people you go to school with. Psalms 142, verse 4, it says, I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. You know, that's how unsaved people feel today. It's not a joke. It's not just a descriptive little passage that David wrote down because he was having a bad day. That's an in-depth look for you and I on how unsaved people feel. Try to remember how the heck you felt before you got saved. No man cared for my soul. That's what it felt like. I was, you know, like every normal American, I've got Netflix. So I remember a few months ago, I don't remember why we were doing it, but Sarah and I, we found this show. And I can't even remember the name of the show. But it was basically, it was one of these goofy deals where they did like a docuseries on some guy who, like, you know, different restaurants and stuff. And it's so dumb because they always try to make, they try to take something as simple and not serious as owning a restaurant and turn it into some like world-breaking event, you know, like something big is going to happen. You know, like the one I'm about to talk about, there's this guy, I think he lived in Australia. He liked, you know, playing in the ocean and all this other stuff. And it's stupid. Like, I remember one of the things that annoyed, I don't know why it irritated me so much, but they show at one point, like, there was some, like this giant sound, like, science-breaking discovery where he's like, oh, I had caviar, and I had it on this piece of lettuce, and I left it in the oven, and then it got smoky, and then it had a smoky taste. Oh, my God. And then they charge you, you know, $150 for something like that. And it was so annoying. I can't stand it. But that guy, he was talking at one point about how he was out in the ocean doing something and, you know, doing whatever. And he was talking about when he was a kid, and he was out there in the surf and playing, and something happened to where it sucked him under, and he would come up and he'd get right, you know, he'd get like right about here to where the surface is right here, you know, you can see it pretty much, and he'd get right up there, and right when he'd get about there, and he, you know, you're getting ready, because when you're that close, you know, you kind of are getting ready to take a big, you know, breath of air and stuff, so he's there physically ready to get some air. And he'd be right there, and another wave would come, and it'd just push him under. It would just shove him back, and right back down to where he was. So he went from being here to, you know, like another 12 feet down below the surface. And I can't imagine that feeling. I can't imagine being that close to being able to breathe and then it pushing you down. But, you know, like the people are trying to be serious in the show, and so they ask him, they said, well, what did it feel like? What did it feel like whenever that was happening? Well, what do you think it felt like, man? You're drowning. Like, you know, you can't breathe. And so they're trying to turn it into something stupid. And you know what his response was? It was kind of saddening to me, honestly, to think about it. I was like, I'd like to have an opportunity just to sit down and talk with this guy. You know what he said? He was like, well, you know, I was a kid, and my last moments were I was sitting there trying to breathe, and I couldn't breathe. He said, I wasn't mad. I wasn't hoping somebody was going to show up. He said, I kind of expected that I was going to die. And you know what the three things he said he felt were? He said, I felt lost, I felt lonely, and I felt afraid. Do you understand every person you work with who doesn't know Christ, every person you go to school with that doesn't know Christ, they may hide it, they may walk around and say, no, everything's great, I got my paycheck, I got money, everything's great for me, my family's doing good. They may lie to you and tell you all that. But deep down, if you really got them in a corner, they would tell you, I feel lost, I don't know where I'm going. I'm just standing out here. I got no idea what's going on around me. I feel lonely. There's nobody here to help me. There's nobody that cares about me. Nobody has a thing to say to me. And I'm afraid because of those other two. I don't know what's going on. That's the real state of unsaved people today. If you feel like that, there are people here who really do care for your soul. And I would suggest you to find somebody, maybe that you came with, or somebody here that talked to you this morning. Find someone to help you and to actually care for your soul. Because much like us as Christians who are running out of time to serve the Lord, you're running out of time to accept Him. So that's the fifth thing. Put some overtime in with the unsaved world, with the people at your jobs and at school. They feel lost, lonely, and afraid. All right, then the sixth thing is the ministry in this church. And obviously we've talked a lot about this. But we know over in Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 5, it talks about how the nobles out there, they didn't want to put their necks to the work to do something for the nation of Israel. But if you want to put it in our sense, do something for Christ. I think it's funny because it says that the nobles didn't want to. Do you realize you're not a noble if you're saved? You will be one day. You'll be royalty one day when you get out of here. But you're a servant right now. Do your job and be a servant. I don't know who you think you are, thinking you're a noble to where you don't have to put your neck to the work right now. You'll get that later, but right now do your job and be a servant. Do something in the ministries of this church. Invest something here. Do something worthwhile and invest something in eternity. Don't invest it somewhere out in the world. They don't care about you. It's overtime. Your neck ought to be to the work for the Lord. Do something while you still got time. And then the last one, and I'll go ahead and pray here. But the last one, put in some overtime for the master. We know over in Luke 19:13, you've got that classic story, and it's accounted for, I think, in Matthew as well. But over there in Luke 19:13, it says, and he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. Every single one of us here, if you're saved, you have been tasked with a job. He expects you to do it. He does not expect you to take those 10 pounds of whatever he gave you and go bury it somewhere and wait for him to come back. He expects to get some interest off of that. You've been tasked with a job. Do it. And when you can't do it anymore, or when you don't think you can do it anymore, be like Jesus Christ over there that we read about. Just go a little further. Do something. Go a little further for him, because he was willing to go a little further for you. All right, with that, I'll go ahead and pray, and then you guys can go on about your day. Dear Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for giving me the words to say to these people. They're my friends, Lord, and I wouldn't trade any of them for anything in the whole world. And I pray that you just give these people something today, and hopefully something I said will just make them, or give them, Lord, something to think about and take seriously the rest of this week, and hopefully the rest of this overtime that you've tasked us with, Lord. And I pray that we all just take these things seriously and put you first, Lord. And I pray for the safety of everybody here on their way home today, and just give us all a good rest of our afternoons, Lord. And we love you so much. Amen.